He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is, giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
Well, TGIF, thank God it's Friday. It's 5 o'clock on your number one show on Friday afternoons or Monday through Friday. In the studio with us today is Governor David Patterson. Governor?
How are you, John?
I am good. Judge Richard Weinberg?
Nice to be back.
And Lydia Serrani. Lydia, you ready to go home and for the weekend?
It's been a long week, and I wish I had some sun like Governor Patterson did.
He's looking nice. He is getting darker.
He is. You're nice and tan. Are you well rested, Governor?
I was Florida. What part of Florida were you in?
I was in South Beach, I was in Miami, and I was in Palm Beach.
When did you go down?
I went down Monday morning.
Wow.
A few different.
I came back Monday morning, so we passed in the air.
Passed in the airport.
Well, I understand this afternoon, Mike Pompeo called me, mm-hmm. and we did an interview. And he's one interesting person, number one in his class in West Point, head of the CIA, mm-hmm. and Secretary of State. Mm-hmm. He's one smart guy. And I asked him, let's go talk about the border. Let's talk about things happening. And let's listen to that interview right now.
You know, I continue to watch what's going on at our southern border, and I'm very concerned. They are not serious about protecting American sovereignty. They're not serious about making sure that we don't get massive cases of sick people coming across the border with COVID. It sounds like they're going to make Americans take COVID tests before coming back home to their country, and they're going to let foreigners who come here illegally not take those tests. That's just confounding. It makes absolutely no sense. And, John, we've talked about this once before, I know, but when we have borders where we have people coming from all across the world to Mexico and then coming across our border from there, these aren't just Mexican citizens. These are not just Central Americans from El Salvador and Honduras and Guatemala. You know, people coming in from all over. We know that the risk that somebody who wants to do real harm here in America, a terrorist or someone else, can easily slip across that boundary and present an awful lot of risk to the United States of America.
Is somebody in Homeland Security, Mr. Secretary, actually giving orders and saying to people, don't check the people who are coming in, just let them walk across?
I think they've adopted a policy that was the Bernie Sanders immigration policy, which was come one, come all. And so, you know, they say they're checking people who are showing symptoms and are sick, but they now have taken this COVID thing seriously. Every place they've taken it seriously, and indoors and outdoors here in the United States, they've made our kids wear masks in schools. But if you're an illegal immigrant crossing our southern border, ollie ollie oxen free, and we'll detain you, we'll send you on your way inside the United States. We may put you on a bus or an airplane to travel all across America, and there's no requirement that we make sure that you're not sick or ill, or for that matter, no significant vetting to make sure you're not a bad actor intent on doing harm here inside the United States.
I know that last Friday, day after Thanksgiving, I was jokingly saying on the radio that if the South Africans can't come in because of restrictions, they should fly to Mexico and walk across. You either have to cry or laugh, you know.
No, that's it. I'm chuckling because the logic there is absolutely impeccable. You literally are going to have American citizens trying to get back into the country, and they're going to be required to have a test 24 hours before they get on that airplane. And yet you have anyone who wants to wander in from that same place. I suppose even American citizens could transit through Mexico if they wanted to make that trip. It's really stunning. Well, there's literally no logic to it if you care about any of the security issues. And this administration just seems to act like the American people won't notice.
One of my people in the studio would say, well, if I go down to Mexico and come over, can I collect $450,000?
We
jokingly said in the studio, is the $450,000 taxable? Do they deduct Social Security on it?
Yes. Can you do it multiple times? These are interesting questions. Maybe one can start a business built around that.
Well, they said that
it turns out people have. The cartels have started businesses based on this central concept of paying people to come across our border illegally. This is a nutty policy. We know how to fix it. The Trump administration had it under control with our Remain in Mexico policy, and we told folks who were seeking to come here, fine, file your asylum claim, but you're not getting in until that claim is resolved. That policy turned off the magnet, turned off the spigot, and we had a secure and sovereign, secure border and a sovereign nation.
The other one, we interviewed Miranda Devine, and the question is, why are so many decisions being made where America loses and foreign countries like Russia, OPEC, and China win, and nobody can figure it out?
It is fair to be confused. It is even more fair to be troubled. And it is very fair to ask hard questions about why it's the case that you would let the Russians finish their pipeline with the ability to choke off Europe from energy if times called for it. And yet we choke off at home. We choke off American energy and demand that the Chinese release oil from their strategic petroleum reserve. These things are upside down. They're nuts. They're not in America's best interest. Your point is very well taken. I've read some of the things that Ms. Devine has written, and it does cast doubts on whether this leadership, this team, President Biden and his team, are serious about doing the things we know make a difference in the lives of ordinary American people.
Mr. Secretary, you were the head of the CIA, which is a very big responsibility. You were Secretary of State, very big responsibility. At what point do career officers in the FBI or the CIA get orders that are contrary to our country's interests and have to follow it by political types?
You know, I've seen this time and time again. We have a system that requires political control of our intelligence community, of our military, right? We have civilian control of the military. In the end, the responsibility for each of these things falls to the political leadership that the people elected, right? And President Biden has the responsibility to direct his Secretary of DHS to secure our border, his head of HHS to say, we're going to handle COVID properly, his Secretary of Defense to make sure that we're going to do what we need to do to push back against the Russians and the Chinese. I have seen little evidence that this administration is serious about demonstrating the resolve. The result, frankly, that I was proud to be a part of an administration, the Trump administration, that showed every day that kind of resolve that really delivers on the behalf of someone living in my own state of Kansas or in Alabama or in Idaho. Ordinary people who simply want to live their lives. This administration wants the government to be something that those people are dependent on, and they're not prepared to do the things to confront our adversaries abroad either.
So you were the head of the CIA. If you were given an order by somebody higher up than you that you felt was contrary to the United States of America, I hate to ask those kind of questions, you know, because I believe that 99.9% of our FBI and 99.9% of our CIA and et cetera, are loyal American citizens.
Yeah,
oh, well.
This is a hard question. Yeah.
It's a very hard question.
This is a hard question. This is pretty straightforward. Look, we have policy disagreements all the time. The president and I would debate what the best solution was. In the end, he was the president. I was his CIA director, or I was his secretary of state. And if he wanted to go a certain direction, that's the direction we were going to go. He was the one elected. If he asked me to do something that I thought was so outside of my ken, so deeply disruptive or immoral or unlawful, then my responsibility is to make sure I don't participate in that. I would then make it clear that I couldn't do that, and I would go do something different. I didn't find that during my time. Everybody who serves at the pleasure of the President of the United States has that same responsibility, and they need to behave in that same way.
Well, it happened that on the Russian problem with President Trump, where they got 40 or 50 old CIA people, old FBI people that swore that Trump was doing XYZ wrong, and it all turned out to be a big lie.
It was all a lie. The idea that President Trump was a Russian asset was something that Congressman Schiff and Congressman Swalwell fed to the American people. The senior political leadership in the FBI supported that, right? They went and got FISA warrants. They went to a secret court and told the secret court that this dossier was true. They behaved in ways that were deeply immoral, and they should be held accountable for that. They're responsible for their own actions in that regard. they perpetrated a fraud, and the media took the bait. The media was willing to go down the rabbit hole with them, and they conducted a fraud on the world and on the American people, the likes of which we've not seen in an awfully long time here in the United States.
As a West Pointer, as a loyal American, as the head of the CIA, Secretary of State, at what point do we allow politicians to do things like that, or can we get the truth out to the American people so they can have the decision on voting the right way? And somebody brought it up the other day that when the truth was they're trying to get the truth out, the Twitter people shut it down.
Well, there's lots of challenges that you've identified there. One is a censorship of conservative ideas, of Republican ideas. That's outrageous. We could talk for a long time about it, but we've got to respond to that in a way that allows every idea to be put out there and the First Amendment to be honored and the big debate on the important issues to be had by the American people. The good news is the flip side of this, John, is it's my sense the American people can see what it is you and I are talking about today. They can feel it, whether
there's a reality check. I think they realize it.
I think that's right. Whether it's the smash and grabs in these stores, the crime, whether it's the fact that this is COVID theater many times where, the president doesn't wear a mask when he tells everybody else to wear a mask. It's not based on science. It's become political. I think the American people can see that. They're not paying for it with higher rent, higher food prices. So they're feeling it in addition to seeing it. I think the American people can see that Swalwell and Schiff fed the American people a line of junk for an awfully long time. And I am convinced in November of next year, the American people are going to do what they did in Virginia and New Jersey a couple weeks back. And they're going to acknowledge the reality of what's good for them and good for their families. And they're going to send a lot of these people back to become civilians and take them out of political life. And I think that'll be a wonderful thing.
We both agree. And Mr. Secretary, thank you for everything you've done for our country and continue to speak out for our country. And God bless you and God bless America.
Thank you, John. God bless you. So long.
That was that's one great American, number one in his class in West Point, CIA director, Secretary of State. And I asked him some tough questions. And I said to him, 99.9% of our CIA people and the FBI people are loyal Americans. Suppose a political type gives them a real bad thing to do.
A directive that they don't agree with.
Yeah.
What would they do? He said he would step away, but he has courage. He also has a lot of integrity, and a lot of people aren't.
A lot of people don't want to lose their pensions.
I don't blame them.
Or they don't want to lose their power.
Yeah. And I worry about our country. We have a special guest in our studio. We have
Senator Jake Corman, and he has been a member of the Pennsylvania State Senate for almost 22 years, right?
Yep.
Right, Senator?
Yep.
Right. And so you're currently president pro temp, and you are now running for governor, and you come from a political background, right? Both of your parents?
But let's talk about first that the reason the senator is here.
Oh, Pennsylvania Society.
It's Pennsylvania Society Weekend, and I believe it's something like 100 or 150 years.
A lot of years.
A lot of years. Pennsylvanians have been coming to New York every December, the first weekend of every December. And I've been entertaining them since I do business. I do business in Pennsylvania. I entertain Democrats. I entertain Republicans every first week in December.
Yeah.
Now, is everybody coming up this week?
Well, not as many as the past, obviously, with the COVID and the restrictions that are here. But first of all, thank you for having me. I'm a little intimidated following Secretary Pompeo because I don't think I graduated top 200 of Bellefonte High School, let alone top one.
I could have been in the bottom.
So I'm a little intimidated here. But, it's a great event because it was established by a bunch of New Yorkers who lived in Pennsylvania to celebrate Pennsylvania. And so every year we honor an individual as someone who's done great things in Pennsylvania, and we have a big dinner and all that. So it's been a great event. I always enjoy coming up.
Well, Well, we look forward to it was a big number, like 100,000 at one point.
Yeah, I mean it's still going to have 500 people at the dinner. I think tomorrow night, which is nice, black tie dinner here. We used to do it at the Waldorf. Now it's over at the Hilton because the Waldorf has changed. But it's still a lot of fun. It's, you know, it's just great to celebrate Pennsylvania. As someone who's lived in Pennsylvania all his life.
Have you been governor of Pennsylvania?
I love celebrating Pennsylvania. You get to see everybody, and it's a great way to bring my wife to Manhattan too. So it's all good that way.
I enjoyed it every year, and now you have another reason for being in New York, and you have you made a big decision. And yeah. Tell us about the big decision.
Well, I made the decision. I've been in the legislature, it was mentioned, for 20 years. I've been the appropriations chairman, the majority leader, and now I'm the president pro tem. And I'm going to run for governor because I want to put people first. I've watched a top-down government for the last 12 to 18 months, the current governor of Pennsylvania, who's dealt with this pandemic and dealt with a lot of issues, thinking he knows best, and he didn't trust the people of Pennsylvania. You know, we're not a stay home and let the government figure out society. We are a can-do society. Show us the problem. Show us the challenge. We will go out together and solve those problems. And you know, our governor didn't trust us. And if we're shutting down healthcare facilities, we're shutting down businesses, we're shutting down schools, he didn't trust the people of Pennsylvania to solve their problems. And I just don't think that's where the people of Pennsylvania are. And so I'm going to run for governor on a platform of personal freedoms and protecting those personal freedoms, which I think is the cornerstone of our great country and why we're the greatest country in the history of the planet, because we trusted people, not government. Jobs and education. I mean, obviously, whether it's a family, whether it's a business, whether it's a state or a nation, economic security is what it's all about. You can't enjoy your freedom, but you can't do anything if you don't have economic security. And Pennsylvania is missing out on a fantastic opportunity to revolutionize Pennsylvania with manufacturing jobs, with all the bountiful natural resources we have in Pennsylvania that the progressive movement doesn't want us to access. And so I'm going to run on the energy economy to create those jobs, and then also an educational program that will provide that workforce to be able to support, to be able to deal with those jobs.
And what part of Pennsylvania are you from again?
I'm from the Center County, Penn State. I live 10 miles from Beaver Stadium. So you go north.
Well, I used to go to Penn State all the time to watch the games.
Yeah, you go north, south, east, west. I'm right in the middle. Mm.
And so you have great name recognition, because one of the problems running for governor, you need name recognition. Governor Patterson, is that one of the items you really need to run?
Well, if you want to be governor in New York these days, you run for lieutenant governor. So you might want to think about that.
Why is that, governor? I don't understand. Would you explain that?
Well, I ran for lieutenant governor. You know how I became governor? I picked up the phone.
Yeah.
And in terms of
sounds like Illinois, too, by the way.
New governor, Kathy Hochul, same thing. So I think it's safer to run for lieutenant governor.
Well, at one point I thought maybe our Pennsylvania motto should be, we're not Illinois. The problems we have, their problems are a lot worse. So,
yeah, they are.
But we have opportunities to do really great things. With our access to markets, with our natural resources, with our intellectual capital, colleges like Carnegie Mellon, University of Pennsylvania, Pitt, Penn State, we can do everything we want to do right there in Pennsylvania. And we should be, you know, my goal is by the time I'm done, that states like Texas and Florida look at Pennsylvania and say, wow. You know, look what they're accomplishing up there. They're doing great things. And we have all the assets and resources there to do it. And I just want to unleash it and allow the people of Pennsylvania to make Pennsylvania great.
Pennsylvania has flowed both ways, Democratic, Republican.
Sure. Yep.
What's the pulse of Pennsylvania right now?
Look, we won two out of four statewide races in 2020. Unfortunately, we lost the President of the United States race. We won three out of four statewide races this year. We elect our judges on the ballot. And so the mood is Pennsylvania is like the mood of the country. You saw it in Virginia, you saw it in New Jersey. That's the mood of the country. They're tired of government telling them what to do. It's about individual freedoms, whether it be just your personal liberties or whether it be in education. Parents want to be involved in their kids' education. I think we are making the message that we should empower parents to be involved in their kids' education, whether it's being involved in a curriculum at the public school or whether it's being involved in picking the school that they want to go to. we want to do that. You saw in Virginia that the other side doesn't want to do that. They want to continue to feed the beast.
Loudoun County, right.
Yeah, of the current system. And they don't want parents involved. And
how is inflation,
so all the mood, I think, is in our direction.
How's inflation affecting Pennsylvania citizens?
Well, it's hard. It's like, you know, gas prices are up. And so prices are up, and so that's difficult. And, you know, that's a supply and demand issue, right? I mean, that's why prices go up. President Biden shuts down, the supply, and then they infuse dollars into the economy, which then drives up demand because people are traveling more, people are spending more money, people are moving more. And so prices go up, and that's hard for people. And so, we have to get the federal government to turn off the spigot, quit incentivizing people not to work. Let's incentivize people to work. Open up, our manufacturing. If there's ever a time we should be bringing manufacturing back to Pennsylvania, back to the United States, it's now. If you see these supply line issues, we should be manufacturing because we do it environmentally better. I mean, if you want to improve the environment, bring manufacturing back to the United States. We have better regulations. We have better things in place to make sure that we do it in a more environmentally friendly way than to do it elsewhere.
Well, one last question, yep. Senator, because we got to go to a break. The crime in Philadelphia is out of control.
Off the charts.
I know I worked with Governor Rendell to get a common sense the only Democrats in Philadelphia. So we wanted a common sense DA, and we lost there completely, and we got a DA there, I understand, that has zero sense.
George Soros gave us a DA, Krasner, who doesn't put people in jail. And we just went over 500 homicides in Philadelphia this year. Just most recently, unfortunately, tragically, this week, a Temple student was killed by an individual who was just arrested 2 or 3 months before, who was let out without any bail, and then the charges were dropped against him for doing a similar crime with a gun. That's what's going on. And, and our governor and our attorney general and others are not doing anything about it. That has to be one of our top priorities because you can't have freedom. You can't have good jobs. You can't have good education if you don't have safe streets.
And the same thing is happening here in New York as well. Where
we have the same problem.
Yep.
Senator Cormann, thank you so much for coming.
Thanks
in
for having me
to New York. Tell more Pennsylvanians to come to New York and spend money. We need them. We need the sales.
We'll do, but come back our way too.
And good luck, and thank you. And I think the number one item that you got to stand for is you either stand for no crime or you got to fight against crime or
– the other side of freedom is accountability. You can't have freedom 100%. Without accountability and responsibility. And when you commit crimes, you need to be held accountable
there
for
it. There should be a consequence, correct?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Jake Corman of Pennsylvania. Good luck on the governor's race.
Thank you so much.
Let's take a break, and we're going to come back with Larry Kudlow.
A common sense recap of the day's biggest stories. It's John Catsimatidis and Cats at Night on 77 WABC.
Well, which way is our economy going? It's Friday. The market's closed. Markets are up. Markets are down all week. And where are we today? We have with us Larry Kudlow. Larry, how are you? Oh, we lost Larry.
Well, maybe, you know what? Larry had a good time last night. Did you see him? He was dancing at Margot's birthday party. He was having a great time.
Well, he's one good guy. The markets are confusing. Employment figures were way off today, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have Larry Kudlow back. Larry, we're talking about the economy and we're talking about the employment numbers were way off today. What's going on?
Well, it was a weird number because non-farm payrolls, the business establishment, was way under. But the other hand, the household employment was fabulous, up 1.1 million. And the household is really more important because that's where the unemployment rate comes from. And unemployment fell to 4.2%. That's very strong. And wages were up very nicely. Hours worked were up very nicely. Participation rate was up nicely. And the employment to population ratio. So it was a weird number. I think that payroll number is a phony number because there was a seasonal adjustment brought it down by 800,000. That's never happened before in the history of the series. So nobody really knows what that means. But on the whole, it was a pretty good number. On the whole,
are we talking seasonal adjustment? That means that you hire people just for Christmas?
No. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has seasonal adjustments to take out certain glitches. And yes, you know, around Christmas season, back to school, things like that. And it just looks to me like they vastly underestimated. So I'm not sure why that is. It's a glitch. But when you see the unemployment rate coming down, I mean, look, in the last 3 months, the unemployment rate's come down from 5.2% to 4.2%. That's a nice number. And the participation rates have gone up. I mean, the economy's pretty strong. To be honest with you, the economy's pretty strong. I know a lot of people are politicizing this number because of the non-farm payrolls, but actually it's a misleading number. The economy is quite strong. You're going to have a big fourth quarter, probably up 9 or 10% in the fourth quarter. And unfortunately, the inflation rate is going to also be up about 7 or 8%. So it's going to be wild. It's like an inflationary boomlet that we're having.
Understood. Now, it looks like the markets, the stock market, interest rates are down again. The market doesn't know if to zig or zag. It's been going down, then has some strength, goes back up again. I think it's going to be a great quarter for our companies. What say you?
I agree. Look, profits are booming, okay? I mean, absolutely booming. Like 25% year-on-year gains for the S&P 500. And that's a tremendous, tremendous number. That's why whatever's going on with Omicron and worries about lockdowns, which I don't think are going to pan out, at least what we know now, people who get symptoms, they're very light symptoms. So let's hope that stays the case. I don't know for sure, obviously. But profits are huge, John. That's a good sign for the stock market. I'll tell you what else is a good sign, a really good sign. This big government socialist bill from Biden, taxing and spending and no workfare and Green New Deal and all the rest of it, which is so unpopular around the country, the bill will not get done. Hear me out. It will not get done this year. Not.
That is phenomenal.
That's a strong prediction.
Right. Right. That is going to push it into next year. There's going to be a pause. And the movement into next year means the chances of the bill going through are dropping, falling, falling, falling. Save America. Kill the bill. That's been my mantra for the last couple of months. And I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, once you get into next year and, you know, the midterm elections and you look at the polls, all the polls show people think spending goes as inflation. They want workfare, not welfare. They do not want to destroy the fossil fuel industry because they know oil and gasoline prices are going sky high. They don't want to provide welfare for illegal immigrants. There are a number of very nasty proposals in there that are extremely unpopular, like 60 to 70% opposition. So you've still got Manchin fighting and Sinema and the Democratic side. I think there's some other Democrats who are going to have a hard time voting for this.
Are they going to, Larry, are they going to surface? Are the other Democrats going to surface?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, Governor. I don't know. We talked tonight.
You've been promoted again, Rick.
Do you remember the book series when we were kids called Where is Waldo?
Yes.
Remember Where is Waldo? Well, in this case, it's the senator from Arizona. He's Waldo. Not Sinema, but the other one, whose name I can't remember at the moment.
Kelly?
Kelly. Mark Kelly. Thank you. So this is a guy who has not uttered one peep about the bill. Now, he's up for re-election, and he has very weak polls. Well, he hasn't said one peep about the bill. He's in hiding.
Well, Larry, this is David Patterson. It's my opinion that Democrats gave the first year to Biden, even with all of these things that have just gone the wrong way. once we get into 2022, they have to start thinking about themselves. And when they start thinking about themselves, a few of them are going to get together, and that's going to be the end of that legislation, because where there are two opponents in the party right now, I think there'll be six or seven by February. I guarantee it.
That could be. I mean, I think that's very sensible and logical, because you look at these swing seats, and as I said, you've got Senator Waldo from Arizona, but you've also got Maggie Hassan in New Hampshire. You got the gal in Las Vegas, Nevada. Those are swing seats that are going to go Republican. They can't vote for this. So I think the bill's dead. But right now, I can tell you with certainty, it will not pass between now and year end. And I regard that as a very good thing, because, frankly, if the bill did go through, it would do great damage to our economy.
Well, we got a minute or two left. What else would you like to tell Americans? Christmas is coming.
Keep working in the bill. Look, I think without politicizing numbers, you look at these, the economy is very strong. Look, John, the ISM manufacturing index, very strong earlier this week. Today we had ISM services, very strong, big, strong numbers. Unemployment claims have collapsed. There are virtually no layoffs occurring in the economy. People are moving around to get higher paying jobs. You're in a very strong economy right now. So assuming and hoping and praying that this Omicron thing is not, you know, far reaching and causes a lockdown, you've got a strong economy, and the Federal Reserve is going to end QE. They're going to stop buying bonds much sooner, probably by January, February. They'll raise their target rates much sooner, as they should. They should have stopped buying bonds 6 months ago. Now, I think that might hurt the stock market in the very short run, but it's just a blip on the screen as long as profits are rising. So, you know, we'll see. Inflation is, you know, that's the horse that left the barn, and it's going to be hard to get it back in. It's not so much pandemic inflation, what I call small inflation. It's now monetary inflation from too much government spending and too much money printing. So Jay Powell's got to take care of that. If he doesn't, John, then all hell's going to break loose next year.
We all agree. Well, Larry Kudlow, you're on Saturday morning between 10 o'clock and 1 o'clock, and you recap the news for the economy for the entire week on WABCRadio.com and 770 in the tri-state area. Thank you so much, and you keep doing a great job for the people of America. Thank you.
Throughout the solar system, John. All through the solar system.
We're transmitting to all the way. Worldwide.
Thank you.
Let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about things that are happening in our country amongst ourselves.
John Katz and the D's. 77 WABC.
Welcome back to the John Katzmatidis Cats at Night Show. We got a full house in studio, Governor David Patterson, Judge Weinberg, as well as John Katzmatidis. And on the line for us right now, we have New York State Assemblyman, Minority Leader Will Barclay. He sent out a very important press release today that could affect all New Yorkers. Welcome, Senator Barclay.
Assemblyman Barclay.
Thanks. Assemblyman, excuse me. Yeah.
His father was Senator Barclay.
Oh, that's why I got them confused.
Right. Assemblyman, it's Judge Richard Weinberg, sir.
Hey, how you doing, Judge? Nice talking to you.
You as well, sir. So I'm very concerned, and I see you are too, about these drug injection sites that have been put in New York City. Would you please tell us how you see the problem, what your objections are?
Yeah, it's kind of shocking. You know, I've been in politics for a long time, almost 20 years. And once in a while, you know, I'm a Republican in a Democratic state, so some things don't really surprise me. Once in a while, I hear proposals come out that really make my head jerk, you know, turn to the side and say, what's being proposed here? And certainly these drug injection sites are one of those. I mean, you know, you think we definitely want to try to help anybody that's a drug addict and want to make sure they get treatment. But my God, we're not only now providing them needles, but we're going to provide them a place to actually shoot up. it seems like it's a complete wrong direction that we ought to be taking. And I'm worried, although this is being proposed, I think it's kind of a out-the-door thing that Mayor de Blasio is proposing. It's not on a statewide basis, but I'm always worried that something like this could gain traction with some of the very liberal progressives that we have in the state legislature.
Well, there's an obsession. There's an obsession about New York being first, so it becomes a model for the rest of the state and for the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And that would certainly be the case here. I think this is a first. I know a not-for-profit tried to do it in Philadelphia, but they were shot down by the Third Circuit Federal Court. So why are we doing this? It's probably not allowable under federal law, but hopefully this is challenged in court and hopefully it doesn't come to fruition.
You're right. I think there's a very strong legal objection to these sightings and the authority to do this by a local government. But it's also the public policy of placing these sites in residential communities when they really should be in medical centers if you're going to help people.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. I mean, certainly we want to help people that are addicted to drugs. But what about the neighborhoods that they're suggesting to put these in? How about the small business owners and the residents that are trying to live crime-free life and try to have safety out on their streets? By dropping these injection sites there, is that going to help any of them? And what about, where's the concern that they have, law-abiding, citizens just trying to go about their lives?
They destabilize good neighborhoods. And the other problem is, and we have to pay attention to this as a matter of important public policy in New York City and in New York State, is the linkage between mental health problems and drug addiction. And we haven't really addressed that properly.
No, we haven't. I think most people, Republican Democrats, do feel like some of the decriminalization of the drug laws was a good thing. Back when I first got in the legislature, it was the Rockefeller drug laws. They wanted to give judges more discretion, which ultimately seemed like a good idea. Interestingly, now, particularly with bail reform, they want to take that discretion away from judges. So I don't know which way the progressives want it. They either like the judges or don't like the judges. But ultimately, whether it's bail reform or these drug injection sites or whatever, it seems like it's just generally bad public policy.
Mr. Leader, we are speaking with Assemblyman Minority Leader Will Barclay. Governor Patterson, I just wanted to remind the audience who we were speaking with.
No, thank you for that. Mr. Leader, it's very interesting that you point that out, because I was part of that whole Rockefeller drug law reform. We had the worst drug laws in the state by 30% higher than the second highest state, Ohio. But the whole idea was to put it more in the hands of the judges than a mandatory minimum sentence. And now we've basically reversed ourselves. That is one of the contradictions, that New York can again be first, because I don't know any other state that's done anything like that.
And by the way, Governor, nice talking to you. I think your father served with my father in the state legislature.
Yes, they did.
highly of them. Are you talking about the bail reform and by not giving the judges discretion on bail reform?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand it. Interestingly, and we're seeing the consequences, obviously, of it. And, Governor, I would say, if someone came to me and said, this is a problem we're having with bail reform, it does have maybe a disparate impact on minorities or the poor, I think anyone would have been open to listening to some reform on bail reform. But why do we have to go so far to the left and be so rigid on it that, ultimately you're seeing these people get back on the street that really are a danger to the community? Why not give the judges some leeway to be able to, decide whether this person's going to cause real danger to the community? And so, again, it's this reasonableness that we seem to have unfortunately gotten away in New York with some of these things that maybe did need some reform, but why go so to such extremes?
We have to take a break, but I want to thank you for coming on. And,
thank you so much, Assemblyman Will Barclay. Thank you.
And would you keep us informed, and we'll talk again next week.
Thanks, John. Thank you very much.
Let's go into the break.
You're commuting home. Cats at Night. Now, here's John Catsimatidis on 77 WABC.
Well, every week we get a COVID update. With us today is Dr. Peter Michalos to give us an update.
A lot going on, a lot of good news, a lot of so-so news. But right now we have some great news that GlaxoSmithKline got approval from the FDA for emergency use authorization for Sotrovimab, which is a monoclonal antibody that now can be given to mild and moderate cases from age 12 and older, which is really something new. So we could even treat kids and anyone over 95 pounds or is high risk for progression. Anybody over 65 will get it. So it'll block the virus in the early viral replication phase. And the way they give it is 500 milligrams one time in an IV over 30 minutes. And if people are high risk, like have kidney disease, diabetes, immune suppression, high blood pressure, sickle cell, or chronic lung disease, they're all eligible to get this. The other news that we have is...
I mean, you have to get an actual... Doctor, you have to get an actual IV versus just taking a pill?
Yeah, for that one, you have to get an IV. But right now, it's approved, and the only approved outpatient treatment as of this moment is the Regeneron IV antibody. The FDA met on the 30th and approved the Merck molnupiravir. The advisory panel said yes, but the FDA did not approve it yet for emergency use authorization. They take the recommendation of the FDA advisory panel, and then hopefully by Christmas we'll have some pills. The other news is that as of Monday, all travelers entering the United States from airports will have to test negative a day before they arrive. So I don't know how they're going to work that out with people coming in by ship or what they're going to do at the border. That's a whole other story. The other concern is that the Omicron variant is starting to pop up in various places around the country, but Delta variant is still the dominant variant. The Massachusetts hospitals are running out of ICU beds, as are in some other states, and the hospitalizations are up 90% in the last 4 weeks. But the good news is that the death rate is not up due to the vaccinated people, just like the first patient who was reported with the Omicron variant was vaccinated with Moderna. They were sick, but they had mild symptoms, so that's great news. And the other thing is that the molnupiravir should hopefully be approved by Christmas, and the United Kingdom and Bangladesh already have approved it, and they're starting to use it there. So that's an excellent,
Now, the word is
we have the pills.
The word around is that the Omicron is a very mild type of flu or COVID. Is that the way you understand it, too?
No, it's not. It's just been reported that the people that had it were vaccinated people, so we don't really know yet what is going to happen with unvaccinated people. I haven't seen any reports of how people who are unvaccinated have done, and also that a lot of the testing that occurs, we don't really ever get to know which variant it is unless you're in an academic center that's doing a PCR test and does a sub-analysis to see which variant that we're dealing with. So that's the difference, but it is definitely more contagious from what they're seeing, because as we said on the CATS roundtable before, that these viruses learn when you put downward pressure on them with vaccines and you try to kill them, they start learning to spread more to find the unvaccinated, and that's what they're trying to do right now. But between the IV antibodies, the pills that are coming out, we should hopefully be getting this under control, I'm hoping, by springtime. But I think now that winter, people, as we said on the CATS roundtable 2 weeks ago, after Thanksgiving, we're going to see a bump in cases. And, for example, in Ohio now, the hospitals are filling up. And but the good news is the death rate is extremely low for people who have been vaccinated. In Ohio, since January 1st, of the 12,372 deaths they had, only 594 were fully vaccinated. So vaccines still give you enough general immunity to hold the virus at bay during its early viral replication phases. But I think with all these new pills coming out, and the Pfizer pill as well, which reduces hospitalization and death by 89%, will hopefully be approved. And it's just a matter of weeks. And I hope the FDA is working overtime to get that into the pharmacies. So we'll, and also testing. We need to expand our testing to know who is positive, get them the medicines and the pills or the IV and antibodies quickly so we can get out of this pandemic finally. But I think the combination of all these things together, that's what's going to really finally get us out of this situation, unless we get some wild new variant that can evade all of them. But God willing, that's not going to happen.
Understood. And all these COVIDs, with all the new Omicron and all those names, they're all interrelated to the original COVID-19?
Yeah, what happens is it's a type of coronavirus, and then eventually it mutates. The same reason every year we have to update the flu vaccine, because the viruses mutate. You know, we try to kill them with vaccines, therapeutics, just like we try to kill bacteria. And what do we have? Resistant bacteria for infections in general. And the same thing is happening. New variants will be popping up until you can get enough people have herd immunity, or enough people are vaccinated and there are enough therapeutics, quick testing, and quickly knock it out in the first few days during the viral replication phase. That's how you get a pandemic under control. But, you know, we're headed in the right direction as a country.
Is there any good, reliable home testing machines yet? Or kits?
The problem is the collection method. That it's very difficult to have someone collect their own sample. And, you know, standing in a mirror and someone's trying to stick something up your nose, your reaction is to close your eyes, to pull away. So the accuracy of these things is questionable. What I'm hoping for, there'll be eventually in pharmacies, just like you can go get your blood pressure checked, there'll be a little machine where you blow into it like a breathalyzer, and it'll tell you whether you have COVID positive or negative. That's what we really need, some super rapid tests to be able to tell us what's happening. But we do have 10,000 testing centers around the country, but we definitely need more, and we need a more reliable home test to be able to identify who is positive. But fortunately, in the United States, we have so many urgent care centers all over the country scattered that if your doctor's not available, go to the urgent care center, get tested. If you're positive, they'll refer you to an infusion center, and you can get antibodies and get help. Don't sit around at home and wait till you can't breathe.
Dr. Peter Michalos, thank you for your valuable information for all our citizens, and God bless you and God bless America. Thank you.
Thanks for getting the truth out.
Breaking news, WABC.
The U.S. Marshals have now taken on the case for Jennifer and James Crumbly. They're the parents of that accused Oxford High School shooter in Michigan, and they have been charged now with four counts of involuntary manslaughter because four students died. He went on a shooting rampage. Judge Weinberg, we were talking about this before. You say that the case is a little flimsy. I want to play for you real quick this what the prosecutor had to say, why she is charging the parents. This is basically a landmark case. Take a listen.
On November 21st, 21, a teacher at the Oxford High School observed Ethan Crumbly searching ammunition on his cell phone during class and reported the same to school officials. Jennifer Crumbly was contacted via voicemail by school personnel regarding that son's inappropriate internet search. School personnel indicate they followed that voicemail up with an email but received no response from either parent. Thereafter, Jennifer Crumbly exchanged text messages about the incident with her son on that day, stating, quote, LOL, I'm not mad at you. You have to learn not to get caught, end quote.
Wow.
Yeah. What do you think, Judge Weinberg? You still think the case is flimsy?
I don't know Michigan law, and I don't pretend to know Michigan law, but I will tell you this. If the charges are four counts of involuntary manslaughter, I think that's a big stretch. If the charge is aiding or abetting in the assistance of a felony, I think they have a case. And there's a difference between involuntary manslaughter charges and aiding or abetting in the commission of a felony.
In fact, aiding and abetting involves more intent.
Governor, you're a lawyer too, Governor.
Well, I think the judge is right. And the judge, who is often called governor, but he is a judge, is right here, because involuntary manslaughter is more like when you hit someone with a car. You didn't mean to do it, but you did it. But it's a manslaughter because somebody died. This is...
And you're an actor. And you're an actor in the...
Exactly. And that's what aiding and abetting is. Your Honor, have a great weekend.
Well, we'll talk about it again next week. And Governor Patterson, Your Honor... have a great weekend.
Thank
and
you.
And Lydia Serrani, take care of your
My little girl.
Your little girl.
Thank you.
God bless
and my husband.
New York. God bless America. And have a great weekend.